He also was a man who could put his own ego aside in dealing with officers in the hope that they would give him victories. That's one of his great strengths. He put up with a great deal from George B. McClellan, hoping that McClellan would give him victories. And when he finally found Grant and knew that he had a very effective general-in-chief in Grant, he gave Grant extremely wide latitude, did not try to micromanage Grant. He still certainly took an active role, Lincoln did, in what was going on, but he let his good generals have quite a free rein to win successes on the battlefield. And Lincoln was willing to change his view of what kind of war it would take to win. He was willing to go from a rather limited vision of what it would take to a vision that encompassed striking at the Confederate home front, hitting civilian property, freeing Confederate slaves, whatever it took to give the Union an edge. So Lincoln grew tremendously during the war and turned into a good, very good war leader. Jefferson Davis, I think, was a good war leader as well. He brought great military experience to his position as Confederate president. He'd been a West Pointer. He commanded a regiment in the war with Mexico very effectively, became a hero in that war, was Secretary of War under Franklin Pierce in the 1850s, and a very effective Secretary of War. And I think that he did a very sound job, although he's often criticized as a Confederate war leader. He initially, I think, tried to protect too much Confederate territory, but he eventually embraced what has been called the offensive-defensive strategy, or defensive-offensive, which had the Confederacy stand on a broadly defensive posture and launch limited counteroffensives where it seemed that they might be successful. I think one of his failings, I think he had a good strategic grasp, I think one of his failings was that he was unwilling to give as much latitude to his generals, even to Robert E. Lee, as Lincoln was willing to give to his good generals. I think Davis fancied himself a sort of general-in-chief as well as president of the Confederacy, and therefore it was very late in the war and only at the Confederate Congress's insistence that Lee was made general-in-chief. But on the whole, I think a good grasp of strategy and military theory and practice for Jefferson Davis. Now, Davis will always suffer in comparative estimates of the presidential leadership on both sides, but in the area of war leader, not political, but military leader, I think Jefferson Davis did very well, as did Abraham Lincoln. I wouldn't give a large edge to either one of them. Which brings us to our last variable, and that is the great unknown as the war got underway. That is, what would Europe do? Would either of the great European powers, would either England or France, decide that it was to their advantage to come into the war on the side of the Confederacy, to extend recognition to the Confederacy, to make it difficult for the Northern blockade to try to strangle the Confederacy? If the Royal Navy decided that it was going to clear the way for commerce between the Confederacy and Great Britain, that would be an enormous headache for the United States Navy. Now again, in the minds of everybody, North and South, who was in a position of authority and had anything at all to do with foreign affairs, the example of the American Revolution loomed extremely large, because in our fight for independence, the intervention of the French had been crucial. It is almost inconceivable that the colonies would have thrown off the yoke, as they saw it, of British tyranny without the help of the French after the Battle of Saratoga. The French sent a fleet. They sent thousands of troops. They gave major loans. French help was absolutely crucial to the success of the colonists in the American Revolution, and both Union and Confederate planners were extremely well aware of this during the Civil War. And in fact, both foreign policies, as we'll talk about later in the course, were tailored to a significant extent to try, on the Confederate side, to achieve recognition from Europe and maybe even material help, and on the Union side, to prevent European recognition of the Confederacy. No one knew what would happen at this stage of the war. I think everyone knew that Europe potentially could be a crucial player in how the war would be resolved. So if we look overall, both at what we've talked about in this lecture and in the last one, at the balance sheet, so to speak, North and South, the conclusions, I think, are obvious. The North had some very considerable advantages, but the South was by no means facing a hopeless struggle for independence. Other countries had won at longer odds. In the end, it would come down to a question of which side would muster its resources and use its advantages in such a way as to gain enough of an edge over the opponent to convince that opponent's population that it was useless to continue the struggle. And we'll leave that now with our balance sheet in mind, and we will shift next time to consider the men who were going to be the critical actors, in one sense, in what would happen in the war, the common soldiers who by the hundreds of thousands and in the end by the millions went into the armies and would be the men who fought the battles that in large measure determined the outcome of the war.